You're listening to Welling 325.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to 325 Podcasts. Today we've got a very, very topical fan, Torsten, Newcastle supporter, as our special guest. Tell us a bit about yourself again. Why do you support Newcastle?
So I support Newcastle because all my family's from Newcastle. So I've been like a boyhood fan for quite a while. So I wouldn't support anyone else.
What was your first game?
First game was actually Newcastle Everton on Boxing Day 2016. We lost in the 94th minute, so I'm still a bit gutted about that. But first win was against Man United at St James's Park. So
it's good to have a guest on who actually has a valid claim to supporting a side. So today we're going to cover sort of the results, the midweek results, Tuesday's results. Obviously, the big one is the 9-0 Man United. I'm not looking forward to hearing Rahul bang on about that.
I don't think anybody is. Might have to skip that section.
Yeah, I'll keep it short.
And then we'll also obviously move on to Newcastle and take full advantage of having Torst here. So let's start us off. Let's move on to Wolves versus Arsenal. We'll go to Costi first. I'm sure he hasn't quite recovered from it yet, but let's hear his thoughts on it.
Well, I mean, where to start? There's so many talking points in that game, and I'm going to try to keep it brief because obviously this isn't about Arsenal. But I think the important thing to highlight in that game was the first 45 minutes really showed, you know, how far Arsenal have come in recent weeks. And I think that just based on that alone, I was really, really happy with the performance. But then obviously, you know, the last sort of play of the game was David Luiz being sent off and a penalty being awarded. And first reaction, the classic was, you know, David Luiz doing David Luiz. But it was clear to me that it wasn't a red, and I don't think it was a penalty either. Looking back on the replays, I'm sure you've all seen them by now, there just wasn't contact.
We'll get on to that. Obviously, VAR is very topical. Rahul, what were your thoughts on the game?
On the Arsenal game?
Yeah, first half, because as I... Well, I mean,
yeah, no, I think they should have been like 3-4-0 up after maybe 40 minutes. I mean, they were very, very good. Partey looked good. Saka looked good. But then it just all came apart. And I think Costi's got a point about David Luiz. I think it's been spoken about that if that was another defender, would their reputation come into the decision as much? Because it was a very, like, disputable call. And a red card for that, so harsh.
Torst, let's just ask you straight up. Was it a red card?
No, I don't think it was a red. Clipped the back of his knee. There was nothing he could do about it, realistically. So I think it was really soft. And I think that VAR in like last few weeks made a lot of bad decisions. You can look back at Aston Villa Southampton when it clearly hit Matty Cash's hand in the penalty.
Yeah, that
box.
Was ridiculous. Yeah, that was stupid. I mean, that's the definition of handball. His arm moved outwards and blocked a shot. About the David Luiz red card, the rule is if you make an attempt to not play the ball and it's a goal scoring opportunity, it's a red card. David Luiz was running, and it's true, no matter how small the clip is, he clipped him at the end of the day.
But he didn't clip him. That's the big thing. He didn't.
David Luiz is the defender at the time. He's the one who does the clipping. The attacker can't clip David Luiz.
No, but the thing is, like, in that scenario, what could happen is, let's say I'm the striker, I'm running into the box, I see a player, I literally just touch them and fall over. It's not the defender's fault. How could that possibly be the defender's fault? You know, we've seen instances, for example, the Chelsea Arsenal final where Aspilicueta literally took Aubameyang down in the box. He was the last man. He took him down, and it was a penalty and a yellow card. In my opinion, that's just a disgrace. The fact that a very clear and obvious sort of taking down isn't a red card, and a literal, like, it wasn't even a clip, it was like a touch of the leg, is a red card and a penalty, which literally is, you know, handing the opposition a goal and, you know, playing with 10 men for the rest of the game. I think it's ridiculous.
But I'm not saying whether it should have been a red card or not. What I'm saying is the law states, obviously, that if you make contact and it's not on the ball, it's a red card. And in that instance, maybe the law needs to change. Fine, fair enough. But in that instance, it's clear and obvious that there was contact. His knee did hit him. and he continued to fall after that. And it's very likely he would have finished it. It was a one-on-one. The red card, definitely a pen. The red card, I don't know. If I was the ref, I would have not wanted to give red. But he had to, because that's the matter of the law.
But I just think, sort of, with that sort of point, the fact that the player, I think it was Willian Jose, stayed up for so long just tells you everything you need to know. He sort of finished his run and then fell over. It was just a joke. You know, I watched it back so many times now, and from every angle, I just physically can't see how VAR hasn't stepped in and at least asked the referee to go check the monitor. It's a joke.
How much did that change the game then?
Just astronomically. It's sort of uncomparable. The amount of comfort we had in that game, we, as Rahul said, we should have been 3 or 4 nil up. Just creating chances left, right and centre. Honestly, we were brilliant. It was one of the best 45 minutes I've seen Arsenal play in a long time. And I just honestly think that both that decision and the penalty just completely changed the game. And it's, I honestly think that the referees should be banned for at least a couple of games.
Yeah, it's probably quite a reactionary opinion and probably not very valid, sorry, but...
So, do you think the referee should be punished for making bad decisions in football?
I mean, it's a tough one because Stan made the point that it is the law, and the law is a red card. So, I mean, in that instance, the referee, maybe he's a bit hasty, maybe it's in his mind, but the law is sending off. And we saw that again in the United game with, what's his name, Benarek.
Yeah, Martial.
He got the exact same thing. So I mean,
that wasn't a red card either.
Yeah. Oh no! But I mean, that shows there's a problem with the law more than the ref.
That's what I'm saying.
I think it's a problem with the refs. Like Southampton clearly came out and stated today that they don't want Lee Mason reffing any more of their games.
Yeah.
And I saw something today on social media. It said we didn't have a problem with VAR in the 2018 World Cup. We didn't have a problem with VAR in the Bundesliga or League One. I think it is English refs, and I think. I was watching Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher talk about it. It's the problem with the ref. They're going to the screen and they're looking at it and they're getting told by someone in their earpiece that it's a penalty or it's not a penalty. And they've got to trust their gut. I think it's just this VAR has like a fear factor and they're scared they'll make the wrong decision.
I mean, didn't Arsene Wenger say in like 2016 that the state of English reffing in the league is like awful and that no refs will get called up for the World Cup? And I mean, he was right.
True.
None of them
true.
Did.
Well,
I mean,
no, there was Howard Webb, but that was in 2010, wasn't there?
I'm talking about recently, mate.
Yeah.
Well, just sort of on that point with referees as well, I think in every aspect of the game, be it the players, the managers, the fans, they're all held accountable for their actions. You know, if a player has a bad run of games, they'll get dropped. If the manager has an all really bad run of games, he might get the sack. And if fans, do something wrong, then they can get kicked out of stadiums, whatever. But the only sort of aspect of the football world that is never held accountable is the referee. I believe that if a referee makes consistent bad decisions, then they should get a ban. They should get some sort of punishment, or at the very least, they shouldn't referee that same fixture in the future.
I completely disagree. I don't know how you can compare the role of a player and the role of a manager to a referee. The role of the player is to go out and perform for their team. The referee is meant to be unbiased. Obviously, recent articles that you and I read today said that there may be this underlying scheme. Very hard to believe, but that referees are told to support the bigger teams. But I don't think they should be held accountable. Everyone makes mistakes. It's very different for us looking at a replay 6 times. Now, this is the problem, because that's where VAR comes in. They can have
look at it 6 times. They should be making the right call.
Yeah, that's not happening.
VAR, but it's not the problem. It's not at the moment. And that's a huge problem with English football. It's like, they keep going back to the screen. They check 6, 7 times and they're still making the wrong call. Like, that is the referee's fault. It's not VAR's fault.
But to be fair, whenever they go to the screen, I think the right decision is made. But the fact that they just don't... for instance, I'm going to bring it back to the David Luiz thing. The fact that that didn't go to the screen is just absolutely ridiculous to me.
But that's because that was the law. That's the law.
No, I know. But what I mean is VAR isn't VAR's job isn't to come to the correct decision. It's to make sure the referee hasn't made a clear or obvious error in judgment.
Of which he didn't. But he didn't.
But he clearly did.
But he didn't. In the matter of the law, it's a red card. I'm not saying that it shouldn't have been, but in the matter of the law, it's a red card. But anyway, obviously VAR, this topic continues on to Man United. Obviously we had, as I think we mentioned earlier, Bednarek. Rahul, let's first of all talk a little summary of Man United, 9-0. I mean, is there more to be said?
Yeah, I think there is. I think that, I mean, obviously, we've all seen that attack. It was horrendous. There's no disputing that. That was a rip. I don't think we argue on that. I think that the way we went about it, getting 9 goals, I mean, when teams go down to 10 men, I know it was early, but you don't expect a kind of thrashing like that. And I think we were just so clinical. And I think in recent weeks, like against Arsenal, against Liverpool, we've had these big chances and we haven't taken them. And this game, I think we scored the first half, all 4 goals were crosses, which we struggled with. So I think it shows like it's a massive improvement for the team and it's a massive like mentality boost.
I hope, so I watched the game and I personally don't think it, I know this is going to sound stupid and bizarre, but I don't think it was that great a performance from Manu. I think it was a professional performance. But I think the way Southampton played, I mean, look at their lineup. You saw their lineup. It was nothing to what they'd been competing with in the league before. Man United did ever so well to make a professional outing and crazily well done for 9 goals. But was it as good as it sounds?
What? I think that's ridiculous. Like, we scored 9 goals. I know that. What are you talking about? I know they had, like, they had 10 men for 85 minutes, 9 men for 6. We went and scored 9 goals, all expertly delivered into the box, good crosses, McTominay's great finish. It was a mix of individual brilliance, mentality and persistence from the team. It wasn't like, all right, we got 4, let's sit back.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has the opportunity to be over-egged as a 9-0.
If you score 9-0 against an opponent, you've done pretty well, haven't you?
You can't really take anything away from a 9-0 win.
No, I'm not trying to. I'm just saying I don't know. Okay, this is going to sound so biased and whatever, but I just don't think it's as good as it sounds. I think it's a blooming good result, fair enough, like, and crazy fair play to Man U. It's a great result. Just like I said, Leicester's result against Southampton last year was a great result. However, I think there are circumstances which made it slightly easier.
Yeah, obviously there are, but like, we took advantage of that.
Yeah, like, it's true. Like, fair point, yeah.
I don't think you can take anything away from that performance.
I'm being harsh, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, you are.
But just on Man United's tactics, I've seen this a lot more in the Premier League. It's where you have attacking fullbacks. I think it's this overlapping, these overlapping fullbacks, which works quite well. And then you have a CDM like dropping back and playing like centre back when you're attacking. And it was brought to the Premier League by Pep Guardiola. And I think Fernandinho plays that role very well. And you've watched Man City, you see them get Walker going forward, João Cancelo dropping into the space. I think that's going to be inherited by quite a lot more like Premier League teams going forward.
Yeah, that is a new tactic, isn't it? That we're starting to see like right back and left back of Man City go into the middle of midfield. Rahul, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, it was like, everyone knows Shaw's been great recently, but Wan-Bissaka, my man of the match last night, he was pretty immense. Like he's been criticised so much going forward, and he went forward excellently, and he made some great last ditch tackles. I think that was just like a all round.
I mean,
brilliant.
Costi mentioned it a couple podcasts ago. He talked about how Aaron Wan-Bissaka has been more threatening from attack. Didn't you say something about that, Cost?
Yeah, Aaron Wan-Bissaka was actually in my team of the season so far. Just purely based
that
on
was
that.
Yeah,
just that I just think he's, you know, although he doesn't have the natural qualities of a player like, I don't know, Trent or maybe Reece James, he is so, like, he's always there. And I think that's just as important, necessarily. He's always in the right position and he's always getting forward. And even if you're getting forward and you're not receiving the ball, you're naturally drifting players with you and you're creating spaces for your teammates. So, yeah, he's been brilliant. And I think 100% he deserves all the credit he's getting at the moment.
Well, like, going back to this like fullback like discussion, I think the fullback has to be the second fittest player on the team. Like, and we saw that last night with Luke Shaw and like Kieran Tierney, and you have a lot of these left backs and right backs who are bloody fit, getting up and down the pitch, and it's vital 13, and we saw that last night with United. A lot of those goals were not being created without an overlapping fullback, because I don't think some of the United players were able to get beat some of their men one on one. I know Rashford probably could, but Martial, like, recently hasn't been able to do that, and that's where they've been lacking going forward. So I think it was key last night.
It was. I mean, I'm not okay. I'm going to go back on what I said. I'm not going to take away fully from their performance. I never meant that, but it was definitely a great result. And especially after losing 2-1 to Sheffield, drawing with Arsenal, I mean, what a response.
Massive.
It is a massive response. It could have been a time where they went down in confidence. But let's move on to Newcastle's result. They've lost 4 out of the last 5 games. And it looked up when they got their 2-0 win against Everton last week. But we've gone back to the same old with Crystal Palace. Let's go to Torsten first. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts on the Palace game, I thought we created a lot of opportunities to score. We weren't very clinical. There was times where Ryan Fraser's one-on-one with the goalkeeper and he completely messed it up. And there were multiple corners where we had an open header and we missed it. And it was the first Newcastle game I've watched in a while where we've had over 50% possession. We've had created more chances and more shots. So obviously, I think we are seeing huge amounts of progress, and that's been because of the assistant manager, I think, Graham Jones. We brought him in from Bournemouth about 2 weeks ago, and we saw that in the opening game. We saw that in the opening game against Everton, where he came in and we were revitalised. We swapped from 5 at the back to 4 at the back, and I think we saw a huge change. And I think he's putting 3 in the midfield, crowding the midfield like Barca used to do. I know I'm not comparing Newcastle to Barca, but I think it's similar tactics like that. And because before we were exploiting the midfield, and when you have two players like Jonjo Shelvey and Jeff Hendrick, who aren't the most willing runners, then it creates huge holes. And them going forward, trying to help out the attack, which you only have a lone striker, Callum Wilson, up there, and then trying to get back I've seen a whole new different Newcastle, so I'm chuffed.
Now that you mentioned him, we actually had a question from Jack about what are your thoughts on Jeff Hendrick?
I think if you leave Burnley on a free contract, then you're not going to be a very good player. I think there's no point in playing him. And I think with the new signing of Willock, I think we've got two promising players in Sean Longstaff, who I don't think is very good. But I think his brother, Matty, is a lot better. And I think he should be playing week in, week out, because you know what he does? And I think a lot of these Newcastle fans want to see is willingness. Miguel Almiron is a perfect example of this. He's not the best player technically. He's not the best player going forward, but he puts in a bloody good shift.
Everything, doesn't he?
And we saw that last night. Hayden lost the ball at the halfway line and Almiron's in the final third. He's the first player to get back. He tracked it all the way back to the corner flag. And I think that's why Newcastle fans want to see. I don't think they want to see Champions League or Europa League. They want to see passion and desire from the players. And at the moment, they're not getting that from Jeff Hendrick or Jonjo Shelvey.
So I was listening to Gary Neville's podcast a couple of nights ago, and he was talking about Newcastle. And he said the actual problem isn't with the manager. It's with the sort of all around the atmosphere at the club. Newcastle is such a demanding set of fans, as you just touched on there. How important is the style of football for Newcastle, Costi?
I think it's so important, not just to the way they play and the results that they get, but sort of like, you know, the identity of the club. I think
Shearer back in, what was it? Alan Shearer.
Yeah, the Alan Shearer days. You know, obviously they didn't win any trophies with him, but the fans had something to sort of get behind. Again, just sort of on top of Torsten's point, that idea of players really playing for the badge, putting everything in is so important. And, you know, the likes of Miguel Almiron do that on a weekly basis. On Miguel Almiron, I think that although, you know, he's not necessarily got the most quality, you know, I've watched him a lot this season. And I think with like the right manager, someone who can sort of train him on a more one-to-one level, he could definitely be a really good player just because of that.
So do you think Bruce isn't the man for Newcastle?
Well, it's a hard one because at the end of the day, it depends on what you necessarily think is best for the club. If you think that the ambition is to sort of push for the Europa League spots, then I don't think he is. But I think he could be the good man just to sort of bring back the identity of the club and maybe get on board with the fans. But we'll see. Torsten, what are your thoughts on that?
Going back to Stanard's point where the club is like over ambitious, I don't think that's completely true. And I think Gary Neville, those words that come out from his mouth are absolutely rubbish. Like Shearer said before, I don't think the fans want to see anything but hard work and progressive football. It's all great saying we have a bit of possession, but if we're not going forward, then what's the point? I've watched so many countless Newcastle games where we just passed it around the back and there's nothing going forward. We want to see it desire. I'd rather a player try to take someone one-on-one and lose the ball. But if when he loses that ball, he wants to get it straight back, then I think that's what we want to see. I don't really want to see us pass the ball around the back for 30-odd minutes, doing absolutely nothing with it.
Do you think, for you, Torst, do you want Bruce... I mean, I don't think you do, but do you want Bruce as a manager for any part of the future?
Well, Bruce has the second lowest win rate in the Premier League, so I think that shows something. He's not a very good manager. I mean, great. He was a great player for United.
450 games is in the PL managing.
A lot of managers manage a lot of teams, but they're not very good at it. He's managed countless teams and he hasn't done very well. I can name most of them. Hull were rubbish. Got relegated. Played very boring football. Villa were nothing. They went down to the Championship. Dean Smith took over. They started playing progressive football. Yeah, and looked
same squad as well. Same squad.
Very, very similar squad. They brought in players like Bertrand Traoré, Ross Barkley, who've been able to do a job for them. And now he's managing Newcastle. And we've seen no improvement over the last 2 years. We finished 13th last year and we thought we could build on from that and like gather something from that and use the momentum after lockdown.
So why was he appointed then?
He's cheap and... I think that's what Ashley cares about at the moment. He's cheap and he's not very expensive.
So are the issues at the top of the board?
He will keep us up because we've got a squad full of quality players. But with the squad with likes of Alan St. Maximum, Callum Wilson, Ryan Fraser, players like that who should be playing. I mean, Fraser was linked with Arsenal for 50 million two transfer windows ago. Yeah. And it's good players like that. Wilson was linked with Villa. St. Maximin's been linked with Napoli, Marseille, and all these top Champions League clubs. We've got great players in the squad, but we're not seeing any results.
I think that the big thing, just on Ryan Fraser quickly, is that obviously he had that phenomenal season with Bournemouth a couple of years ago. But what sort of spoke to me more than that season was the season after it, when his contract was running out and he just sort of refused to play and he was having goes at the manager and stuff like that. I think that really damaged his career. You know, he's still only 26. He's got a long career ahead of him. But I think with that sort of attitude, I just can't see him be sort of coming back to his best. But again, we'll see. I think
I definitely agree with you. He's a very stubborn player. You have to play Fraser's way, and at the moment, we aren't playing that. He liked when he had Josh King and Wilson up front. He would get on the wing, he'd get chalk on his boots, and just whip balls in. I think that's what he's good at, but Newcastle aren't doing that, so they're not playing his way. I think he can be a locker room cancer. I don't think he suits Newcastle, like the Newcastle identity, very well.
For you, Torst, for the future, let's say this summer, which two positions need strengthening the most in your first 11?
Well, definitely centre mid, and I'm glad we brought in Joe Willock from Arsenal on loan to solidify that, because at the moment, Jonjo Shelvey and Jeff Hendrick are not doing a very good job. They're lazy. And we saw like last night, Shelby's very, very stubborn. He wants to play his way. And we said, you've got to adapt to, it was a wet and windy night on Tyneside and he was still trying to ping long balls, half 50 yards across the pitch. You've got to play it on the ground, you play it firm and it's all about passing move and that doesn't suit him. He wants to sit back and ping balls.
Ping them, yeah.
And I think we also need, I think attacking, we don't need anyone there, we sorted that out. But I think definitely a...
Shars looked really good.
Charles looked very good. I think he's come into his element a bit more. But, like, he is a bit stubborn as well. I don't think he sometimes plays badge. He gets a bit wound up. But I think this season we've seen a real improvement for him. I think he wants to play for the badge. And he's seen that by putting countless challenges, putting his body on the line. But I think the final position we need is a left-back. And I think to last season we were linked. We had Jetro Williams on loan. And we were linked with him again this time. And he's a free agent at the end of this season, so I would like to see him back because, I mean, he did provide us with a lot of goals in great games, Liverpool, City. So I think games that we can, especially at St James's Park, like they are winnable games.
Just sort of on that point of the left-back specifically, I think I just can't see Newcastle investing heavily in the left-back after last summer. You know, the addition of Jamal Lewis. It's just not the Newcastle way to spend... it wasn't big. What was it, around? Was it 15 million?
15 million. He's been for us. I want him gone.
He's gone back.
It's not the Ashley, but
he was quality before, wasn't he?
At Norwich, he was a good player at Norwich, but he wasn't.
I think mainly it's he's not playing with confidence, and we saw that, like, highlighted that last night. He doesn't want to use his right foot. It was the 94th minute, and if you watched it, he spent 4 or 5 Cruyff turns trying to get it onto his left foot, but then it becomes predictable after playing 90 minutes against, like, a left back. It's just, I want him gone. He's not taking on players.
True. So left back second position, but in my opinion, I think that the midfield is the most important for Newcastle.
Yes,
but not just one. I think you need significant investment. I've got the squad up next to me, and you've got two quality goalkeepers. I think, in my opinion, one of them will probably leave in the summer, and you'll get a substantial fee. So that could be reinvested back into the squad. You've got Jamal Lascelles and Fabian Schär, who are both Premier League quality centre backs who can do a good job.
But Lascelles, the thing with Lascelles is he's not playing the modern way of football. He's an old school centre back, and I think you're seeing a lot more teams want to play out from the back, and they want these ball playing centre backs, which is why they pay huge amounts of money for them. And especially like left-footed centre backs. That's why like Lindelof isn't the best like player realistically, but he's a left-footed centre back.
Lindelof's quality. He's a composed.
He's good. He's good, and his price tag won't match what he's like actually worth.
He's got half the attributes of a modern.
It's like Ake signing for Man City.
Oh yeah, that's a perfect example. He's 45 million. Ake's not worth 45 million, but he's gone in there to do a role that a lot of players that can't do because of the way he's footed.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think left-footed centre backs are so in demand at the moment. You know, the first thing Mikel Arteta did when he came to the club was bringing Pablo Mari, was his first signing, at a left-footed centre-back. And then he sort of strengthened that with Gabriel in the summer. But I think with Newcastle, I wouldn't say the centre-back is the first position I go to. I think Fabian Schär and Lascelles can do a job.
Most definitely.
But then, you know, looking at sort of like the DM role, for example, the only player you really have is Isaac Hayden.
I think he's the most.
He's class.
I think he should be playing for a top 6 team. He puts in a shift every week. I mean, we signed him from Arsenal on a free transfer, but I think he's been quality for us. And I think he's one of the only players that goes out there and tries sometimes.
Exactly, but I think he just needs some cover because, you know, one injury to him and then that sort of game over for Newcastle. But I think the addition of Joe Willock is going to be really important.
Yeah, I'm excited.
You know, I could talk all day about Joe Willock. I've watched him a lot of the last couple of years. I'm not going to. All I'm going to leave you with is the fact that he's going to work hard for the team. He's quite a frustrating player sometimes. You know, I'm not going to tell you that he's going to be world class. He is frustrating in the sense that you'll see him one game score a banger, play beautiful football, and the next game he just won't do it. But hopefully he can find some form.
So, now we've discussed the squad, we've discussed recent results, what the style of play. I want to look at the broader picture, the board at Newcastle. Obviously, we had the rumours of the takeover, and apparently they were going to sign Mbappe, and it was going to be a new fresh. Yeah, exactly. So what are your thoughts on the board, Torsten?
Well, I think the Premier League needs to be held accountable. There is no reason that the Newcastle takeover shouldn't have gone ahead. It would have provided not only money into Newcastle United, but into the city of Newcastle as a whole. And I think that was much needed, especially, you know, like going up north, the like industry up there is like diminishing. So I think it would have been much better. And I think it needed a lift. I mean, we've been sucked and used as this cash cow that Mike Ashley has for 14 years now, and we've seen no improvement. We finished our highest ever finish was 5th in the season. We had Pape Sissé and Demba Ba up front. But apart from that
game against Chelsea still haunts me. The goal was another level.
I just think that Newcastle needs some much needed investment. And I think, like, going back to what I said earlier, I don't think Newcastle fans want to see Mbappe. They don't want to see Neymar. They just want to see players who will work for the team and represent the city that it is, a hard-working city. I just think at the moment it's been sucked dry of anything that goes into there. And I think a lot of players just gone in there and been used for profit. I mean, we've seen Cisse sold, we've seen Kabay sold, we've seen Hassan Ben Arfa sold. And it's players that like idolised and epitomised the Newcastle identity, but have been sold for profit at the end of the day.
But does that not
Soko Wijnaldum? It's just
does that not like outline the sort of role of the lower clubs in the Premier League?
But Newcastle like, isn't a lower club.
No, but
it's one of the biggest clubs. It's got one of the biggest fan bases in the whole of England. It's got one of the biggest stadiums.
Come on.
And I think we should prove that we can be up there. We've had numerous legends play for the squad. I can name for you Gascoigne, Shearer, Gary Speed. I think huge players that have come through and huge players that have gone on to do successful things. Sissoko, Wijnaldum, Kabay, who played for PSG. But these players like this that performed at Newcastle and have done well at other clubs, and we just need much other investment around them to be where we should be. We should be in the top half. We should be pushing for 8th, 7th. Teams like Everton, we should be competing with them.
Yeah. No, I think you should. But I think there is a very big divide of sort of the difference between a player going to a big club like Man U or Liverpool or Tottenham or Chelsea or Spurs is Tottenham or Chelsea or Spurs.
Or Arsenal.
Okay, we can put Arsenal in there. The traditional big six, there is a big difference between the sort of role they play. You don't see them selling players for profit. Like, can we think of any examples of them? Maybe Bale? I mean, Rahul?
No, I mean, obviously there are different roles now because of what's happened to Newcastle in the last 6 years. I think with Newcastle, like, it's clearly the owner. I mean, you've seen clubs like Aston Villa, West Ham, Everton, all these teams that kind of mill around the middle of the table. They've pushed up, they've invested, and look at what's happening to them. I think that's what Newcastle's want to see.
And
they
built
see passion.
They've built an identity. Yeah. Like, let's take Leicester, for example. Did you watch that James Maddison interview?
Yeah, against Arthur Chelsea.
After the Chelsea game. They built an identity. They work hard. They work hard for the teammates. They work hard for the fans. They work hard for the manager. I think that's what we need to see.
You don't play for Brendan Rodgers unless you want to work your socks off. Is what you said, wasn't it?
That's what I want to see at Newcastle.
But even at Leicester, can they sustain like the squad they have? Like, are we going to see Maddison go for 75 million? Are we going to see Pereira leave? Are we going to see?
I don't think so, because I think they enjoy playing for Brendan Rodgers.
I mean, even if we do see them leave, we've seen Maguire leave, Chilwell leave. They brought in Castagne and Fofana, who are just class players. They've got one of the best scoutings.
Upgrades. They sell Chilwell 50 million, they bring in a better left back. They sell Maguire for 80, and they bring in a better left back.
That's daylight robbery. I think
Maguire is a decent centre back.
I think Maguire needs to be dropped. Lindelof and Bailly.
I don't think we've got time to get into this one because I've got thoughts on that.
Maybe next episode.
But anyway, a massive thanks to everyone listening. A huge thanks to Torsten. That was a quality episode. Cheers for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Really enjoyed it.
That was brilliant.
Hope to come back on soon.
It's good to talk about one of the lower teams in the league for once, you know. but cheers for listening. We'll be back with episode 5.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.